Welcome to the Brain Crops Podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Myers, and today I'm joined with a new friend, Zach Hoskins. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I couldn't be more happy to be here.
I'm so excited to have you too. So I think what happened was I noticed that we had a lot of mutual friends and connections, and I'm like, who is this Zach guy? I got to reach out and find out more. And every time I talk with you, it's just like, I leave the conversation more excited for the next one. And so I'm just really excited to have you here and share you with our audience and let you share.
Yes. So excited. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I feel like I always leave our conversations just full of joy and just ready to take on the world. So I'm excited.
It's awesome. It's like those kind of people, and you're in this camp. I love the meeting people where you're like, I think I already knew you, or like, yes. I feel like I've already talked to you before.
100%. Yes. I love it.
But for everyone who doesn't, give us a little background, Zach. I know that you put your background so beautifully into three categories. So tell me about your background.
Yeah, for sure. So I break it down into three categories. And so the first category, well, I guess there's a fourth category, a bonus category. My wife and I have been married for going on almost 9 years, and we're expecting our first kiddo here in July. And so we couldn't be more excited about that. So on the professional side, I kind of break it into three categories. The first category is I had a 10-year career in the Missouri Air National Guard. And so I spent time working on the B-2 stealth bomber, and I spent time with, you know, just learning leadership and systems, processes, flows, culture, how that can work in a large organization like the military. And then I also grew up in a military household. My dad's a Marine, and so I've always had these building blocks of the military kind of accountability and ownership kind of laid across my life as I've grown up. And the second category is over the past decade, just over a decade, I've sat on leadership teams of entrepreneurial organizations across multiple different industries. And I've sat in, you know, the marketing seat, the sales seat, the operations seat, the finance seat, kind of all of the different seats. And for a majority of that time, I sat in the integrator seat. And so those industries ranged from accounting to overseas manufacturing, to digital marketing, to technology and industrial refrigeration parts even, and just kind of all over these places. And so I gained a lot of experience actually operating inside of a business and, you know, going through COVID and leading through COVID and all of those different pieces was super awesome to experience. And of course, all the amazing people I was able to do it with was amazing as well. And then the third bucket is for just about 5 years, I've implemented some sort of business operating system framework, whether that's, you know, EOS or some business made simple type things from Donald Miller, or just kind of an operating system, you know, Jim Collins and his Entrepreneurial 2.0 and some Patrick Lencioni, just some things like that. Just being able to provide businesses some clarity and vision and helping them execute what they're looking to do.
Mm-hmm. And I love it. As I'm listening to you talk about this, I'm like, I'm hearing, you know, parallels with my own professional history where it kind of, to some people, seems a little bit like this, but actually there's these, you know, common threads woven throughout the whole thing. So talk to me about those. What did you notice as your strong suits, your similarities, your superpowers?
100%. You know, I'm in Strategic Coach, which if you're listening to this and you're not a member of Strategic Coach and you're an entrepreneur out there looking for resources, I would highly recommend it. It's such an amazing organization. So I'm in year three and we're starting to talk through and kind of get deeper into the unique ability and unique process and intellectual property and all of that stuff. And it's been really cool to, like you said, look back and see these themes. And something that I've kind of gathered from all of those places is I love taking a state of chaos and making it into a state of clarity. And so whether that was in the military with, you know, dealing with maintenance issues and, you know, high level amounts of invested money to ensure that a plane could fly, to leading a team through COVID and how do we create this chaos into clarity. And then even with the clients that I work with, how do I take, you know, if they're running around with fire, you know, like a chicken with their head cut off, or, you know, running around on fire and fighting fires, how do we create a state of clarity there? So that's been something that I've absolutely loved. And I think that's a huge theme. And that's just a passion that I have, is just how do we take something that's just jumbled mess and then create clarity?
So for you, is it something where when you start talking to someone and looking at things, it just reveals itself to you, or do you just really enjoy untangling it?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like there's probably a little bit of both. I find myself being so genuinely curious about people and trying to learn what's actually going on in their head and what are they excited about and what are they passionate about? Just like you were sharing earlier about, you know, the things that you've got going on. It's just, it fires me up to learn. I just have so many questions. And so eventually sometimes those conversations come to like, well, Zach, this is where I'm really struggling. Like, I'm trying to get here, but I don't know how, or some of those kind of conversations naturally tend to go to, I truly in a state of chaos and I'd love the clarity. So it can be natural. And so I try to just approach and lean into my genuine curiosity towards the people who I love and who I want to help and, you know, just want to pour into them.
I love that approach. That's my approach too. I just love asking questions, and it's like, you know, then you have more based on whatever that answer is. It becomes a really interesting process. So would you be willing to talk us through some of that, you know, chaos to clarity?
Absolutely. So one thing, we talked about like themes. So one theme that I found was after looking at kind of everything that I've dove into and all the experiences that I've had, I noticed that there's like six pitfalls of chaos. And if you avoid those pitfalls, you can usher in just insane amounts of clarity in your business. Mm-hmm. So one of those pitfalls is a lack of clear vision. So we all know that if we don't have where there is no vision, the people perish. That's, you know, of course, a well-known saying. And so having that clear vision is so paramount. Having poor execution and implementation of that vision is another pitfall. Another one that I've seen a lot is the constant fear of running out of cash. So if you're a business owner and you are always afraid of running out of cash, of course, that can cause a lot of stress and anxiety and fear. So that's another one. That's the third one. The fourth one is whenever we have a lack of clear roles and accountability and people are stepping on each other's toes and we don't really have that ownership mindset inside the business. The next one goes along with people as well. And that's like wrong people, and which causes team dysfunction. You know, maybe you have that team member that's been there for 20 years and you just don't want to have that tough conversation, but you know, if you have that tough conversation, you might be able to get to where you want to go and those types of things. And then the final one, and this is one that I've been really finding a lot of, impact with is the frustrating and costly meetings. You know, are we having too many meetings? Why are we having these meetings? They're costing us money because we're getting everybody into the, you know, we're not even taking to-dos from these. Nothing's getting done. There's no follow through, no accountability on getting all those things done. So those are the six pitfalls of chaos is what I'm calling them that I've seen across my experience. And I'm just like, I really feel like if I could just help you avoid those, the clarity is going to come.
Yes. Yes. And I can see how, did you say number one was clarity?
Number one is like, yeah, lack of a clear vision. So
yeah,
casting that vision out.
Which is so interesting because it's like without that, all of those other symptoms that you mentioned would indicate that there's a lack of clarity. But I'm totally, totally with you on the meeting thing. I can't even, it's like I get really passionate about this in a way that seems like ultra judgmental, but I don't understand why if there's a meeting, you know, there should be some really clear boundaries around like, what is a meeting? Who is coming? When does it start? What does it end? What are we addressing? Not to be rigid, to be effective, to yes. have a rich discussion that leads to results. Because the result I'm wanting is not the meeting. The result I'm wanting is coming from, you know, what we discuss inside that meeting. Talk to me about how do you format your meetings? What do you recommend?
You nailed that. I loved how you said not to be rigid, but to accomplish. And so something that to keep in mind, and this is across a majority of everything, whenever you may be bucking structure or maybe not wanting the structure, how do you build a building? Well, you need to create scaffolding around it. So like if you don't have the scaffolding, the structure around the actual structure that you're building, well, then you can't actually build anything because you don't have boundaries. And so I love how you called them boundaries. And, you know, if we can create the scaffolding, it actually allows us a lot more freedom to be creative within those boundaries. And so, yeah, so some keys to great meetings. Like you said, I mean, you called it out, starting on time, ending on time, having a set clear agenda, getting into a space to where you can pull yourself out of the day-to-day and get to a different level of viewing. Because when we go to a meeting, if you actually look at like, what are we actually doing? What are we actually looking to accomplish? Well, we're pulling ourselves out of the day-to-day of what we're doing. We're coming together to collaborate with other humans to get to and to achieve more. Mm-hmm. And so if we aren't able to create this transition period right at the beginning of the meeting to ensure that we're pulling ourselves out of that day-to-day, well, then there's no difference than if we were just working. And so one thing that I've, it's been really cool to see work in action, and I just learned about this, is from a good friend, Johnny Ashcroft. He is talking about getting into flow states, or like ways to get into a flow state before you do high level work or strategic work or meeting work. And so one of those transition tactics is one that the Navy SEALs use, and it's called box breathing. And I think we might all be familiar with what box breathing is, but have you done it to start your meeting? So take that 2 to 3 minutes and inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, and follow that box with your whole team around, whether it's on Zoom or in a conference room. What you're doing is you're all getting on the same rhythm. You're getting all on the same frequency so that you can attack the problem and transition out of your busy, 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 rush, rush, rush. Slow down, get everybody aligned, then attack.
Wow, how interesting. I really love that. I've never tried that before a meeting, but I wonder if it would pair nicely with one of the techniques that I teach my clients, is to put your hand over your heart, especially if you're in a state of anxiety, and do some deep breathing, deep intentional breathing, because it really brings you back to the here and now, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you pair that, wow, how powerful. I'm going to have to think on that and try that out. Thank you.
Yeah, of
Thank
course.
You. Well, I kind of went backwards, because I was like, you know, the meeting thing to me, of course, you're high level, and I'm in with the people, right? With all of my work. And so one of the things to me that's a telltale sign of not a good fit is how someone shows up or doesn't show up for a meeting. It can really be a significant time saver, actually, just to observe behaviors. And the other thing I wanted to add to what you were saying is I'm pretty intentional about who needs to be in the meeting, because I think sometimes we have these, you know, company-wide or department-wide meetings that really the information is intended for just a few key individuals who will eventually delegate, but in that moment, it's not necessary. I think we need to be really careful about who we're involving in meetings, both for the function of the organization, but also to manage the emotional experience of our employees. They don't need to be burdened with things that aren't yet relevant to them.
Absolutely. And I mean, you tag on that third line of what's that bottom line, what's that costing your bottom line? And I'm not trying to get just really micromanage-y on the finance stuff, but really, if you're intentional about who's in the room, well, you might be pulling someone who's better served doing other work and not in the meeting. So being intentional around the meetings can knock down a ton of dominoes across the business, for sure.
I like the way you put that. Absolutely. And then there is just a lot that can be handled via email. And I just want to put that out there, because I think I've sat in so many meetings where I'm like, why are we meeting right now?
Totally. Absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. I love it. Tell me some more. So what do you get, go backwards. That was number six. What was number five?
Yes. So number five is wrong people and team dysfunction. And you could probably speak so much more to this. As far as, you know, the classic one that I've seen is you have, maybe it's an organization that relies heavy on sales, or, you know, you have this rainmaker in the office, and they can just bring in that revenue like crazy, but no one likes them. Or they cause a ton of conflict inside of the business. And so it's always, I've had many conversations where it's just like, what do we do about this? We really like the revenue and it solves a lot of problems, but it's causing a lot of chaos and team dysfunction when that person is around. And ultimately, I think we all know what the end of that story is. You ultimately have to, if you're willing to make the tough decision and make and have those hard conversations, you can get around that revenue issue, make sure that your whole team is happy, and rising tides then raise all ships at that point.
What's really interesting about what you're saying is, on the surface, you're right. They may be, you know, a high performer bringing in a lot of revenue. However, you also have to account for turnover because of some of those individuals. You know, what I've experienced more often than not is that people out themselves. So if that becomes the guiding standard, right? That we'll just call him the crazy guy or the jerk or whoever, her, she or he, is causing all of this chaos, and that's allowed to be there. Well, then the people who don't operate that way and are concerned with having a better experience in their professional lives, which quite honestly is most of our awake hours, right? They're going to leave. They're going to leave, and that is expensive too. And so you really need to weigh it out from different perspectives, not just the initial hit, but what is this costing us over the course of a year? What is the lifetime value of our other employees to us?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going. Let's go backwards.
Okay. Lack of clear roles and accountability is the other one. So one thing that I see often here is that we have six people. For example, we have six people at the front desk. And nobody has a clear role. So when something comes in, it just keeps getting pushed to the next person. But that person then pushes it to the next person. And so we don't have these clear, defined roles that say, no, these two team members are specifically for new patients, or these two team members are specifically for checkout. And sometimes when you don't have that structure and those roles and the empowerment that you can gain from giving those individuals that clarity in their roles, you can have a lot of dysfunction and chaos whenever nobody's willing to take accountability for the things that are happening.
Yeah. Have you heard that poem? It's super cute and short, but it's summarizing what you're saying perfectly. It's the anybody, everybody, somebody, nobody. There was a job that anybody could do. Everyone thought somebody would do it, so nobody did it.
There you go. It's perfect. That's exactly right. Slam dunk.
Yeah. So that's one that you'll come in and you'll just look at things and be like, okay, this stands out to me as an immediate impact maker for your organization.
Absolutely. Well, think about it. If, you know, put yourself in, you know, in the shoes, so, of a business owner who might not have had this visual representation of what their business looks like, where everybody on their team can take a look and say, oh, that's what everybody does. This person sits in this seat and that's their key roles for that seat. Now I understand what that person is doing. Oh, by the way, I see myself in this seat. Now I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And now I see how it all works together. And if I do what I'm supposed to do, that person's going to do what they're supposed to do. Again, rising tides raise all ships when that's communicated and there's some buy-in there.
You're so right. And you know, in my conversations that I'm having with people, people want to be a part of something. They want to feel like they're contributing and they want to know where they can grow. There needs to be some sort of, you know, target for that. And if I'm unclear about my roles and responsibilities, I don't know how to contribute best. And I also don't know how to gauge my progress in this organization. So I think that is so important, not just for the function of the job that they're currently doing, but for the overall experience and the energy that they're creating in that job.
I love how you said that. I think, you know, the growth piece is super substantial and can get overlooked. Something that I heard that blew my mind was, it was a phrase. It was basically like, as a business owner, what you need to do is you need to cast a vision so large that your team members can cast their own visions within yours. And so when you do that and you kind of share, like, if you have this visual representation of the structure of the business and you can show your team members, hey, I hear you and I see where you're at currently, and I hear and I care enough to learn about where you're wanting to go within your personal goals and your personal vision and all of that. Mm-hmm. Here's where I see you over time. And it still fits within the business owner's vision, but it also fits the team member's vision. You low turnover, higher empowerment, accountability, all of those things skyrocket when they can see that their vision's going to be made true within yours.
100%. I'm getting so excited about this part of the conversation. This is, you're singing my song, Zach. This is awesome because, you know, now you're not just a place people go. You are a part of the place that they've decided they want to go, and they adopt you into their growth experience. They take you home with them. They're talking about you with their spouse. Their spouse becomes, you know, also involved in this process, and they see you as a resource. They see you as a mentor, as a guide, rather than a job. We leave jobs, right? But we don't leave things that are deeper inside of us. And if that's what we're trying to create, which I believe many organizations are trying to create, places that people actually want to be, then we've got to be aware of the psychology behind the reasons people stay and go.
100%. You nailed it. Love
awesome.
It.
All right. Number three.
Okay. Number three is the constant fear of running out of cash.
Okay.
And so there's, you know, this, there's a couple of key pieces here. Something that I've seen, especially being a part of a leadership team of an accounting firm for so long, it was awesome and amazing to be under the mentorship of those leaders and what we were able to look at on a weekly basis to just learn what the financials needed to be or look like, and having the budget in place, having the cash flow analysis in place, having the ability to run projections, having the ability to run contingency plan scenarios with your cash just in case things might not happen the way they need it to be or you think they would go. Having some of those key pieces in place can give you so much peace. And if you don't, and you're operating kind of with like your hand over your eyes or with a blindfold when it comes to your cash or your you know, the revenue pieces and the expenses, that can be a really big issue. And so that's something I'm really passionate about too, is just the peace there that can come from having some of those pieces in place.
And I'm wondering, is that kind of one of the, or you tell me, what is that? In my mind, that would be one of the areas where people would be like, okay, I'm at red flag zone. I need to hire Zach, or I need to get a solution in place here. But what, as we're going through these steps, what are the ones you see most commonly where people are coming to you saying, okay, I know I need some help, and here was my indicator?
Yeah. You know, definitely the frustrating and costly meetings. That one's been a big one, especially as organizations are absolutely skyrocketing their growth. Mm-hmm. They are like, I don't know what to do here. We have been running meetings like this, maybe preparing agendas before. We had spreadsheets over here and with all of those things. And we just don't know how to have good, clear meetings. So that's definitely a huge one. Another one is, just to be quite honest, I mean, I think if you don't have a healthy fear of where your cash position is or what your financials look like, that can be scary. That can be ultra chaotic. If you don't know how to make payroll, if you don't have a cash reserve strategy so that you have your rainy day fund in place so that you can come out from a abundance mindset as opposed to a scarcity mindset, that's another big one. You know, those are two big ones. There's a, you know, whenever you talk about the lack of clear roles and accountability, there's some where it's just like, we got people stepping on each other's toes and we're not really seeing this ownership mentality. That's another big one too. There's no follow through. People aren't doing what they're saying they need to do. Having a systematic accountability plan in place can help that out substantially as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really important. You know, and one of the things that, as you were talking, and I was thinking, a lot of us decide to become business owners because we want that level of freedom, freedom of time, freedom of money, right? Freedom to do the things that we're really, really good at. But if there isn't a healthy financial status in your organization, you're much less free than if you just worked for somebody else. You're burdened completely. And so, yeah, it becomes incredibly important to have that all in line and to know who to turn to if you don't.
Absolutely.
All right. Number two.
Number two is poor execution and implementation. And so this kind of goes back to the, you know, if you are an amazing visionary and you have this clear picture of where you want to go, but there's no way to reverse engineer that down into a clear, actionable plan that you know exactly what you need to be doing, you know, next year to ensure you're on track for that, what you need to be doing in the next 90 days, what you need to be doing next week, what you need to be doing today to get it down to the ground to say, here are the things that we need to actually be accomplishing day in and day out to achieve what we're ultimately trying to achieve, then that's huge too. And I think that that goes into, you know, when it says poor execution and poor implementation, that can be across all of the different, that can be across the ownership mentality, that can be across lack of follow through, that can be across not knowing what we're actually needing to be focused on. I can't tell you how many times we've set up dominoes that we think would lead to the right thing, but they're not the right priorities to actually focus on. They're not the right levers to pull to get mm-hmm. to where you want to be. And so to the degree that you can truly take a step back and figure out what those key levers are to pull to get to where you want to be can be huge as well.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a really high quick start, really poor implementer. And so it's really important for me to have people around me that can help me know, okay, that's, I get your vision. Here's what we need to do. And then if it's for me to do personally, it's got to be laid out for me in a way that is just like, I need to not be the person to organize that part.
Totally. Yeah. Well, that's good for you on the self-awareness piece. I mean, knowing that, and that's one thing you probably dive into more is like the strengths assessments and the different pieces there. But to the degree that we can have self-awareness and this emotional intelligence surrounding where we're not good at, and then being mm-hmm. willing to go find those individuals to surround ourselves with who are good at those things. I mean, goodness gracious, you know, the sky's the limit once you get to that point.
You know, you mentioned emotional intelligence. I think it's a mental wellness component because, you know, just sitting in a room, I can think of my friend Cheryl. I sit in a room with Cheryl and she's like, oh, well, then here's all the things that need to be put in place. It's so calming because it's her strength, not mine.
Yeah.
But together, it creates a really fantastic outcome. And so I think that is so important that's a piece that you go into, which leads us to number one, which is my favorite.
Clarity. Yeah, the lack of clear vision. Yeah. So typically I've only really seen this if you have a business and you're not a true like visionary. However, there's two sides to this. You know, if you're launching a company and you're not a true visionary, well, you need that self-awareness to surround yourself with the people mm-hmm. to help you cast that vision. However, I think you and I probably know some visionaries mm-hmm. who might not have a clear vision, even though they have huge visions, or they may have too many visions, or they might not have the vision actually written down and out of their head so that they can transmit that or communicate that to the team to get everybody aligned around that vision. And so that's the biggest pitfall here is maybe you have that vision, but have you actually taken the time to write it down and get it communicated and get people aligned and rallied around it?
And everything around this conversation has led us to this point, which we were talking about before the show, that I think is so important. Included in that vision has to be what you want personally or your other things outside of the business. How does this integrate with everything else that is important to you? Can you talk to me about your journey in that realization and what you think on that?
Yeah. You know, we both know Eric Roman, and he has just created this One Life retreat. And again, just like the strategic coach plug earlier, if you're an entrepreneur and you are looking for some strategic working on your life, I would highly recommend you go check out Dr. Eric J. Roman's One Life Retreat. So one thing that I've kind of learned through all of that is, like, how do we build the business around our life as opposed to how do we build our life around the business? And so that's caused me, you know, my wife and I are expecting our first kiddo in July here, and, you know, really taking a step back and saying, what do I truly want my life to look like? And what do I want to be for my wife? What do I want to be for my child? Like, how do I want to show up? And making sure that I have those intentional answers in place so that I can start to craft the business surrounding that. So that's been a really cool journey to kind of get creative and get curious about and see, is it even, can it even happen? Is this even an option? What kind of experiments can I do to try and make this happen? And so growing, you know, growing this business while having that in mind has been a really cool way to just say no a lot more, to take an essentialist approach, to call out Greg McKeown's book, Essentialism, but a less but better approach. And so currently what I'm focusing on is I'm obsessing over quality, not quantity. And so my goal is to just obsess over quality and bring as much value as I can to a smaller set of clients so that I can maintain that freedom, flexibility, and be there for my wife and for my child and for my family and friends and however that looks. So,
man, it's just such a meaty topic because, you know, I do this work with a lot of my clients who are business owners, as well as even, you know, our oldest is 21. And so he's got, in his mind, he's got a goal that he wants to reach by 30, a certain dollar amount. And so the conversations we've been having are, you know, you can make that money doing just about anything, but let's take that off the table. And this is the same conversation I have with my business owner clients. Let's just say that the money already exists. How do you want to spend your time? Where do you thrive? Where do you just light up and you just could do this all day, every day? And that's a space we really want to play in, because the money will come. If you put out value into the world, the money's going to come. You do a good job, people are going to like you. They're going to vote for you. But it ultimately, and I know that you see this too with your clients, you can do it backwards. You can make all of the money, and then you're still asking yourself the same question, like, why doesn't this feel the way I thought it was going to feel? What do I do different? What do I do now? And so if we can design it at the forefront, with our true priorities involved in that and integrated into that, it's just such a richer experience for ourselves and everyone around us, including the people we're trying to impact and help in the world.
Totally. And I don't want to alienate the individuals who are currently feeling that right now, who are like, man, I wish I could have gone back and done it a little differently. And that's where I think my passion comes from, as far as like desiring to take you from chaos to clarity, is because if we can achieve that, then you can achieve that even where you're at right now. Even if you didn't start out building your business in the way that you now kind of see and have this realization, well, you can still have that life. You can still grow your business without giving up your life. Mm-hmm. There's just these pieces that you can have in place and these pitfalls that you can avoid to kind of help guide you that way. And I love what you said about, you know, play. Where do we want to play? And I love that quotation of just like, life is play. And when you talk about life is play, well, there's a couple of different ways you can read that. You can say life is, so play. Or you can, you know, so it's just like, it is what it is. Why not play? Mm-hmm. Or it is, life is play. So that's what it is. That's what we're doing. So why can't we go play? Why can't we design our lives and architect our lives around play? And so something that I've been kind of working on, something that hit me a couple days ago, I took a step back and I opened up a brand new blank page of my notebook, because I was like kind of wrestling with this like ambition plus like being content and kind of like, how do you balance that? What do you, you know, how do you look through that lens to where you're just like, no, I'm actually okay, but I'm still looking to do more. And so something I did was, and I call it the gratitude sesh, kind of like gratitude session. What I did was I listed out the key categories of kind of my life. So we've got like mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, intellectual, social, career, financial, all of those pieces. And I left space in between each of them. And I just sat and I got outside and I just felt the sun and I just started writing. And I started writing what I was grateful for under each of those pieces. And I just wrote and wrote and wrote until I couldn't write anymore. And it was cool because the lesson that hit me after I was finished, and I was like, man, I've exhausted everything I can write. It's like, you've already won. Everything else is icing on the cake. And so that was just a really cool experience to say, like, you can be content and you can be ambitious and you can hold those at the same time and let them flow in between. I don't know. It was just a really cool experience. So,
wow. That was really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think that gratitude is, it's completely free and often overlooked, but it is such a powerful practice. I agree with you. You know, we do that with our kids in the morning. I've been starting them out saying, you know, okay, what is your favorite thing? What are you excited about? What are you grateful for? And I was doing it with my little boy the other day, and he's 7, and he, at first he was like, oh, I don't know. And then after like the third or fourth thing, they just kept coming and I'm grateful for this. And I like that.
Fun.
Look at the tree. And it was so cool. And it's just like, you know, if you know, I heard this quote the other day that the mind is a wonderful servant and a terrible master. And so we have to tell it what to think about. And as soon as you do, our brains love repetition. They love pattern. They love accumulating. So as soon as you start finding that fourth and fifth 100%. Thing, it's just flows right through you. Oh my gosh, this is an incredibly abundant world. And I am just so blessed to be a witness of it and a contributor to it. And it makes everything so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Happy to share. Thank you for sharing that. I'm taking notes over here for things to do with my kiddo as they grow up. So that's good.
Oh my gosh. Well, Zach, this has just been an incredible conversation. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about while we're on?
I think this has been just absolutely amazing. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity to chop it up with you and just continue our conversations and get kind of this. Hopefully it resonated with some of your audience, and that's my goal. So
I know that it has. Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to have you, to know you, and we'll be talking soon.
Yes. So thankful to be on your podcast. I'm so thankful to know you too.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.